And we're a lot of big boys down there. And we get on this bus, and there's absolutely no air conditioning. So we're dripping sweat. Everyone, I'm sorry, is extremely hungover. Everyone's crabby as can be. And then on top of it, there is bumper-to-bumper traffic all the way out to the Bourbon Trail. There are two things in this world that I would say I love. For all of our listeners, we know I love funeral service. I love talking about it. I love engaging in it every single day. I love marketing it. I love all this stuff. I love funeral service. Do you know what the other thing is? I love bourbon. Bourbon is my favorite. I could drink it not every day. I shouldn't say that, but I enjoy myself a nice pour of bourbon. And today we have on Lacey. She runs herself a very interesting bourbon tour down in Louisville. Lacey, I want to hear about it and what would apply to our funeral directors here.
All of this will apply to funeral directors. If they love funerals and cemeteries and bourbon and podcasts, they are tuning in to the right people today.
A great combo.
Yes. Yes, it is.
So tell us about this, the bourbon tour that you do. I know that you're taking cemetery tours of some of the famous distillers from over the years and years. Tell us a little bit about that and how it came to be in the first place.
Yes. So during the pandemic, I really wanted to focus on passion projects, which the first one was writing this book with Greg Grabowski, Engaging the Heart of Hospice. And it was also studying bourbon. And so I have taken many different college courses related to bourbon tourism and bourbon hospitality specific to Kentucky. And I've also attended Moonshine University to become an executive bourbon steward. And I had this dream in 2019 that I wanted to take people to go visit the final resting places of Kentucky's bourbon legends. And I put off, and I thought after I finished all these bourbon classes that 2023, this was going to be the year of the Bourbon Legends Tour. So that's what I want, and I'm excited that I have people that are joining me from all over the country. Some are funeral people, and some are bourbon enthusiasts, and some are both. And we leave at 10 a.m. Here in Prospect, Kentucky, and we visit four different cemeteries and pay our respects to about 20 different Kentucky bourbon legends. And we have lunch at Jim Beam's kitchen table, and we wrap up with a private barrel tasting at the world's largest collection of whiskey, which is at Watch Hill proper.
Wow, what a fun. I mean, you're literally speaking my language right here. I gotta get down there on this tour. I actually was in Louisville this past summer. It was one of my best friend's bachelor parties, okay? And this is my first time in Louisville. A lot of our friends' first time when we're down there. And we had ourselves a very fun first evening. We were out very late enjoying the beautiful scenery of downtown Louisville. The next day, anywho, we have to go on the Bourbon Trail. And for those of you who have never been there, the Bourbon Trail is quite a bit of ways from downtown Louisville. It's like 45 minutes, like to the closest one. So you have to rent, kind of like how Lacey has either a Sprinter bus or a limo or some kind of car if you're obviously partaking in the bourbon. So we hire ourselves this Sprinter van. And mind you, it was the middle of summer and it was like the hottest day in Kentucky in the last like 6 years. It was like 102 degrees. And we're a lot of big boys down there. And we get on this bus and there's absolutely no air conditioning. So we're dripping sweat. Everyone, I'm sorry, is extremely hungover. Everyone's crabby as can be. And then on top of it, there is bumper to bumper traffic all the way out to the Bourbon Trail. We ended up missing our entire first tour, and then we couldn't even catch the second tour because we got there right at the end. And it was just a horrific experience. And it had nothing to do with the actual trail or bourbon itself. It was the surrounding circumstances. But besides that, I loved it. So I'm gonna have to go back to redeem myself, I think.
We would love to host you. It will be a memorable experience, no doubt.
What are some of the famous legends that you go to see on the tour?
We go see George Garvin Brown, who was the founder of Brown-Forman. We also visit Pappy Van Winkle. We also visit the founders of Weller's. We also visit the Beam family, and we visit the founders of Willett Distillery, as well as Maker's Mark and Isaac Bernheim. And his final resting place is at Bernheim Forest. And it's a very scenic drive that we're taking, and a lot of history. I do bourbon trivia. We also have a few bourbon tastings in between the cemeteries, but it's a lot of fun.
Are you pouring one out at every graveside? You got to give them a little splash for each one.
Not quite, not quite, but we do taste the bourbons of the people that we go pay our respects to, but we don't do it at the gravesite.
Yes, you got to show some respect in some class, of course. That's super cool and super interesting, and that's very unique compared to the rest of what you see there. I think when you do the tours, a lot of times they have similar, because obviously bourbon is a specific recipe. You have to follow a set of rules, so a lot of the tours can sort of blend together a little bit, but not this one. You're not going to see this in the cemetery too often.
And people have questions, if they're not out, if they're outside of the funeral business, they have questions about cultures and different funeral rituals and ceremonies. And they also have questions about cemetery engravings and markings and tombstones. And then occasionally I'll get the, obscure funeral question, which I'm happy to answer. So it's a nice mix of conversation that's taking place in between the cemeteries, but they do enjoy the story. They do enjoy, learning the fast facts and the historical notes about each of the distillers that we go visit. It's a very complex history of these distillers and distillings that are bourbon distilleries that opened and closed before, during, and after Prohibition. But I like to keep the history and the storytelling very simple for my guests so that they do take away and they do remember something about each person.
That's a key, especially when you're driving around to all the places and you need to uncover a little bit of something that they're going to stick with them, and they're having glasses of bourbon. It's a little more challenging to maybe keep your memory straight. So when you hit home a few points, I'm sure that makes a big difference. And have you had a lot of success, or a lot of people going on the tour?
Yes, I've had great success, wonderful interest. I am filling up quickly for 2024. I'm actually going to be partnering with a pretty well-known travel agency as well that will be bringing more out-of-state people in large busloads that want to go to different cemeteries. And 2024 is starting to look pretty exciting.
Yeah, sounds like it. I got to get on that schedule there, that's for sure. What would you say is your favorite bourbon? I guess I don't get too nitty-gritty with it, because it seems like maybe for the common folk, your favorite brand typically.
I really, truly love Bullet Bourbon, based in Shelbyville, Kentucky. I really like what it is that they have to offer in regards to their tour. It's a multi-sensory tour that they offer. I think it's a very bold and well-balanced flavor as well with the high rye content. That's one of my favorites. I always recommend that to people. And at the end of the day, I like all bourbons.
Yes.
Bullet, really, it's a special one that is near and dear, and was fortunate to try a very interesting one today of a new blending experience and private barrel experience that is opening up in now near downtown Louisville, and that is called Pursuit Spirits. And that one was pretty unique, and I was fortunate to bring a bottle home with me today. So I look forward to sharing that with family and friends during the holidays. And it is one I picked today. It's spicy. It's got a little bit of a peppery kick to it, but you can really detect the sweetness of the corn and have rich oaky notes that really emerge from the aging charred barrels. But yeah, so that could be my new favorite one. We'll see.
Yeah, I got it. You're making me want to skip forward to 5 o'clock here so I can pour myself a couple fingers. Now that we got a little bit of a buzz going to start the podcast, Lacey, of course, has all this information about bourbon, but she is also very immersed and involved in the funeral industry. Lacey, I want to know your background about where you've been in funeral service and where you are right now.
Well, my dream was to be a Kentucky licensed funeral director, an embalmer. And when I was a student at Mid-America College of Funeral Service, we took a tour of Aurora Casket Company, and my mind was absolutely blown. So it wasn't but just a little bit after I had gotten my funeral director's license that I went straight to Aurora, and I was in customer service. That was my foot in the door. Really enjoyed customer service for the couple months that I was there, and then immediately started working towards being a trainer. And my specialty has been customer service skills, and that's what I've done for about 18 years. I've traveled the country internationally, presenting programs that help funeral directors improve their customer service skills. And a couple of passions that have emerged from that has been living funerals and hospice relations. And those are really the main three things that I have been training on, since I started in funeral service.
Super cool. I'd love for you to explain a little bit about what you mean by living funerals. And I know you have a book that you just mentioned earlier about hospice relations. So I guess tell us a little bit about what living funerals means to you. And then I'd love to hear about your book after that.
Oh, thank you. Well, a living funeral, also known as pre-memorialization, it's an event where a person gets to experience and participate in their own funeral or memorial service before they die. And, you know, for some people, they may be diagnosed with a terminal illness, and they say, you know, I want to have this experience before it's too late. And they plan a And then sometimes living funerals are disguised as a 95th birthday party or a 100th birthday party, or, you know, someone who is, serving as a guest of honor for a particular themed event. You know, maybe they're in a parade or some sort. But, living funerals can be disguised, but it's the opportunity for a person to reflect upon their life, express their feelings, and share moments with loved ones while they're still able to. And I have just been fascinated with living funerals for over 10 years. And it's something that I enjoy talking to funeral directors and hospice about, and how they can plan very memorable living funerals and making it customized and making it a true reflection of the person's personality and their preferences.
That's a beautiful experience for someone to get to go through that. It's unique too. It's not something that you're going to see every day, but it is such a nice thing when you've lived a long, beautiful life to be able to see what people really think about you, and just commemorating and celebrating your life while you're still around. I mean, that has to be so touching for the person. I can only imagine.
Yes, and I truly believe that funeral directors can be a part of that conversation, and I urge them to think about how they can make it a part of their service offerings, and think in terms of, this is a family or an individual who does value the concept of a funeral. They just have a very different timeline of when they want that funeral to be, but everything they're wanting is what funeral directors believe in. It's the same mission that comes with honoring a person's life.
It's so cool. Yeah, I mean, as funeral directors, we're especially nowadays, we're trying to find any way we can to expand our services. Typically, we have large facilities that often are going unused, especially maybe like Saturday evenings, talking strictly from funeral service. that's like a perfect time to offer, say, we have this beautiful facility for you. We have room for you to have all your food and whatever else you want to be involved with and customize it to what you want. It's like a nice additional service. And not only that, we are very equipped and experienced in this exact same field. So that is an interesting way where we can expand a service. How do you think a funeral director can get the word out there about them doing this sort of thing?
I encourage funeral directors to first think about how they can better portray and showcase their event planning skills, because sometimes funeral directors are simply viewed as those that are coordinating religious funerals or sad funerals. Yeah. And to put out there in the community with community organizations, different members of the community, that there is a very fun and creative side to funeral directors. And I, mm-hmm. you know, I recommend funeral directors to partner with assisted living facilities or senior groups and throw a 100th birthday party for Mildred or a 75th wedding anniversary for, you know, Bob and Donna, and to really showcase what you can do as an event planner. And when the community starts to see the funeral director as someone who can do more than sad funerals, they're going to start talking. Their wheels are going to start spinning and think about, okay, well, you know, I'm interested in a living funeral, but do I really want my family to do all the planning? I want them to be a part of it and to enjoy the afternoon or the evening, but to have a professional in charge of coordinating behind the scenes.
And that's what we do. And that's what we do best. Yeah. Not only that, but if someone does, God forbid, have a loss and they attended one of these services at your funeral home, I mean, they might be very much more likely to select you during when they have their own loss too. So it's just another way of getting in front of people too.
Exactly. You know, they may, at the time of death, they may say, you know what, we just did our living funeral. We may pass on having a traditional funeral or memorial, and we must respect their decision. We understand that. But the fact that you were able to connect with that person before they died, that means something. Okay. And part of being in this continuum of care, whether it is before the person's death or after the person's death.
Yeah, that's a very, very good point and well said. So tell us a little bit more about hospice relations, which you're very involved with, and you have a book on it. So tell us about the book and what hospice relations should mean to a funeral home and how we can apply it to our businesses and our lives.
Well, I first want to give a shout out to Hospirus in Louisville, Kentucky. I have been a volunteer with them for over 7 years, and I sign up for all different volunteer opportunities. For the last year, I have been in medical supplies, and I have the opportunity to meet different nurses and CNAs and talk to them and make sure they have what they need before they hit the road in the morning. And I've also done quite a few different events. I'm going to be an elf next Tuesday night for their hospice kids Christmas party. And, you know, my passion for hospice has only grown through those different experiences that I've had the opportunity to be a part of. And I have been colleagues with Greg Grabowski, founder of Hospice Advisors, since my Aurora Casket days. And we connected during the pandemic. And I said to him, I think you need a book, Greg, for funeral directors. And he said, well, why don't you write it with me? And I said, okay, let's do it. And it was the perfect time to really focus on that project and determine what that direction should be and what it is we want funeral directors to know about hospice. And we recognize the vital role that funeral providers can play in the continuum of care for hospice patients and families. And funeral providers, they're essential when it comes to caring for decedents and supporting bereaved families. Mm-hmm. Yet they have, you know, unique challenges. They've got limited time and resources to really create a strong partnership with different organizations in the community. And we want to help funeral homes, you know, think about what that marketing strategy is going to be, what their budget is, and to really know, as especially as they head into 2024, which hospice providers to start building that relationship with.
Yeah, because I think every hospice is different, so you want to probably associate with the best one since all of our funeral homes are the best. And it's such a good practice to have the relationship, whether it is has anything to do with a hospice referring or not referring or saying this funeral home is really nice, but just having that relationship with them because they're going through very challenging things just like we are. Sometimes, honestly, even more challenging because they build a relationship more with the actual person and the family, and it could take a longer period of time. So we share that common connection that we're going through these challenging things. And I think building that rapport and relationship with hospice is just absolutely critical for every funeral home.
Every funeral home. And we both feel like that there is a huge and missed opportunity for the funeral business to pivot from being viewed as almost like a retail experience to being a part of the healthcare community. And it's taken decades for hospice to be accepted into the healthcare community. And they've worked extremely hard to be in the position that they're in. And we want funeral service professionals to have those same aspirations.
Yeah, that's such a good point because we are that last step. Like, maybe people that are outside of the industry don't think about it as much as we do, but someone has to take care of these remains and bring them to whatever their final form of disposition is. And that absolutely is still caring for that loved one, caring for the remains. It is that next step. And it is so interesting that you say that. I've never really thought about, there is a big disconnect between hospitals and hospice. Like they seem very related at this point. And then it's the funeral home. And then everyone thinks that this is just a widespread thought that funeral homes are more trying to get people's money, which we know is simply not true. We're trying to help the families. Is end of the day, I could go on a tangent about that, but we in hospice and hospitals, you don't really have that sense or that feeling because it is a medical service. Why can't we frame what we do as part of, you know, the medical field, because it is something that is a requirement that everyone needs to go through at some point in their life too.
Absolutely. And something else that funeral directors need to be aware of is how many deaths in their county have been under the care of hospice. Okay. And it's often assumed that it's this number, but when Greg and I present the data to them, they realize, oh my goodness, there are many more individuals that we didn't even anticipate that were also receiving hospice care. And so to look at that data and to look at the number of hospices that may not have an office in the county, but they are certainly helping families in that county, it's good to look at that data and to determine who they need to devote their time and attention to, and who is the best person within those hospice providers to connect with, because they need to hear those individuals, the shared values, the common vision, and the ideas that the funeral home has for a partnership.
Yeah. What are some recommendations that you would say then for building that relationship or the partnership? What are some things that you would say to a funeral home? This is a good course of action.
After looking at the data and knowing which hospice providers to partner with and who to call and contact with, it is understanding how to build that relationship with that person based on trust. in communicating to them that the shared values are there, the same mission is there, mm-hmm. But being able to communicate with them in a way that says, not necessarily, this is what our funeral home can do for you. It is saying to them, this is our why, and this is how we can help you help your families. Mm-hmm. And going in with telling your why and understanding their why, that's when those aha moments are taking place. They also need to see effort on behalf of the funeral director, that they're willing to put in the time and effort to make that connection, work with hospice providers, to give them tools and resources that's going to help them help their families. Because for them, that is a sign of respect, because they have worked so hard to be in front of the medical community, to be accepted, that they're looking for that same effort on behalf of funeral directors, that they are not necessarily rolling out the red carpet within the first 5 minutes of that conversation. So when you put in the time to build the relationship, you start being seen with them in the community, doing different community events together, that makes a difference for them. So it's that commitment, that demonstration that really says to the hospice care team members that you definitely do care, that you definitely do get it, because they are looking for someone to understand how hard they're working on behalf of families and patients.
Yeah, I think what we do would resonate with them too, because we do work so hard just like they do. And once, I love what you said about talking about your values and everything that you believe as a funeral home. And once you have that click, that's something that they're going to remember and keep in their mind for when they are discussing options with the family and things like that. That's a very good way to make an impact in your community and just increase your outreach too.
Yes. And when you're making those connections, I have a whole chapter on having a CRM in place and knowing who you've spoken to at hospice. What is their preferred name? What is their role? What have they said to you in the past that's going to help you, follow up with them in the short-term or long-term future? Be keeping track of all of that, and also keeping track of families who call the funeral home, inquire about services that are receiving hospice care. You need to understand, where you're pulling families from. And knowing what those trends are and what hospice providers are advocates for the funeral home, yeah. And which ones are not advocates for the funeral home.
Love that. Love that.
Oop, that's a death call here. Hold on just a second. All right, I think the students got it. I'm sorry about that. We've been seeing a lot more business come in ever since we started mortuary marketing. And I got to tell you, all the funeral homes we work with, they're saying the same thing. So what do? We run ads on Google and other similar sites that get directed at families that need a funeral home in your area. It then brings them to a page that we've designed for you that gets the family to call you to inquire for your services. It's really increased our volume big time. It's working for my funeral home, and I think most parlors could really benefit from its uses. I put a bunch of information in the podcast description. Go check it out. I'm always happy to help talk with you and answer any questions you might have. All right, let's get back to our morbid discussion.
I'd like to know a little bit more about your background and what you're doing today. On top of all this, you have so many things going on. I know you were had a stand with NFDA as well, and you're a professor at Worsham. So we'd love to know about both of those things. As a Worsham boy myself, come on, mortuary school in the country, the world.
Yes, I love Worsham. Wonderful 5 years at NFDA, where I continued my travels teaching the arranger training program, which was an 8-hour program focused on customer service skills. And as I was looking to close that chapter of traveling, I thought, okay, what can I do that can still have an impact, especially on the future of funeral service? Mm-hmm. And I'm fortunate to have joined Lily McMorrow, which is a program director at Worsham College and my colleague, Heather Brotz. And Heather and I are team awesome when it comes to creating online programs. And we have created some advanced courses for Worsham students and ones that are really hands-on. And I have about 75 students at the moment. And I teach customer service skills, a little bit of marketing, merchandising, and that infamous course, funeral directing, that you may recall. But we also work with students one-on-one on Zoom, where they play the role of the funeral director, and I am Sad Sandy making funeral arrangements and really working with them on fine-tuning their communication skills as a funeral director.
That's huge. Yeah, it seems like they're so much better equipped than I was. I'm just kidding. But I'm just kidding. But the online program seems to be just taken off at a lot of mortuary schools. And it's such a good thing because I think these people are able to get experiences inside the funeral home, as opposed to like when I was in school, you had to go in person and it was challenging to keep a role at a funeral home at the same time. That's very, very long days and long weeks. But if you're able to do it based on your own schedule, if there's downtime at a funeral home, you might be able to get that experience as you're still in school. And I'm always a huge proponent of don't just dive in to mortuary school. You got to like test the waters a little bit. And this helps do that even more so. So you know if you're able to be well equipped and be able to handle it.
Yes. And with Heather Brotz behind the scenes helping to build these programs, they are very savvy. We use a variety of multimedia tools. Of course, we have discussion forums and interactive platforms. We want to enhance the learning experience for every single student. And we want their experience at Worsham to be not only valuable, but truly dynamic.
Yeah, that's what it's all about. And I do love like all the discussion boards that you have, because I just remember being in school and it was definitely a community and everyone's trying to help each other because there are challenging things you have to go through, not only, you know, study wise, but emotionally, if you're dealing with cases on the side at the funeral home or at the medical examiner, things like that. So it's good that you still are able to bring the group together and encourage that community.
Yes, it's very rewarding to be a part of their journey into becoming a funeral director. And of course, at the beginning of the semester, I always love hearing, why have they decided to be a funeral director?
Yeah, that's my favorite question for funeral directors that come on the pod. I was like, why? Why'd you do this? Come on.
Yes.
What is your favorite class that you teach?
Probably the customer service class.
I knew it.
On talking about customer service skills, whether it is how to build trust through credibility and empathy, or even talking about the women's restrooms. I love it. I absolutely love it. I've got very unique learning opportunities built within the course, and it's exciting to for me to also learn from their perspective. It's really, really interesting.
Give us one customer's relation takeaway that many people wouldn't think of in the funeral home.
A customer relation takeaway.
Yeah, like a tactic or something that we could apply to our funeral home.
So I think at the very beginning of meeting a family, it's incredibly important to, of course, state your name, but also state your role and what you do at the funeral home, but also giving a line that goes beyond your basic title of funeral director and using the word creative. We specialize in creating memorable life tribute events and putting out there, not only in front of the family, but the universe, that there's a creative side to you, that you want to create multi-sensory experiences for families. You want to make it positive. You want to make it memorable. You want to make it a true reflection of that person's life and to be more forthcoming with that introduction in making that happen in the very beginning of the arrangement conference. And credibility goes a long way. Yeah. And my my advice to anybody who's new in funeral service or young, starting out in funeral service, don't be shy about that credibility. Put it out there, put out there the path that you are taking to complete your apprenticeship, to earn your funeral director's license, and talk about your creativity, that you are ready and willing to think outside the box for what that family's vision may be.
Credibility and creativity. Write that down, funeral directors. Write it down. Lacey, so much fun talking to you. I want to know the name of your book one more time, and as well as the bourbon trail that I'm going to be going on. Give us both of those before we jump off.
Thank you. Engaging the Heart of Hospice. Visit www.hospiceadvisors.com. And if you're interested in my Bourbon Legends Tour, www.bourbonlegendstour.com. I'd love to host you in Kentucky. Come on down.
I'm planning on it. Thank you so much, Lacey.
Thank you.